Was it something we said?
Are you talking to me?
Do you have a comment to make?
Are you talking to me?
Or a bone to pick with us? Why not send us an email to feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com or join our forum at forum.midwestpeaceprocess.com. Or you can just leave us a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/midwestpeace, or follow us on Twitter @midwestpeace. So that's how to contact us. Now let's give you something to contact us about. This week, we discuss Rob's harebrained ideas. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
to remind
Process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 35. Today is July 12th, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
This is Harebrain Rob.
Nice.
Sounds strangely like the normal Rob.
Indistinguishable from the regular Rob. Before we get started, I wanted to give a quick plug to a charity that you will find on Facebook, if you're on Facebook. Search for Less Crappy, More Happy. That's the name of this charity. And what they do is they provide care packages to our troops who are overseas right now, mostly in Afghanistan. And they do a pretty good job, I think, of collecting donations from people who are here local in the St. Louis area, but also collecting money for buying those things and paying the shipping, because the shipping over there isn't always cheap. So I just wanted to encourage everybody to go look for them on Facebook. Again, that's Less Crappy, More Happy. And they have a big yellow button on their page that you can click to donate and like their page, too. Maybe leave them a comment. Tell them they're doing a good job. So.
Nice.
To the show.
Is this a local thing then, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Snappy. We're not really name. Contributing to the Less Crappy right now.
We are contributing some crappy.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's make it more happy. And let's discuss Rob's harebrained ideas. What do you got for us this week, Rob?
Oh, I got a number of things. Let's start with number one.
Okay.
I think something became crystal clear to me in a recent conversation. I want to run it by you guys and see what you think.
You had an epiphany?
An epiphany. The light shone from above, and it all became clear. And I will try to make it all muddy for you guys. So I guess I had this thought. You know, we were talking about just what are these fundamental differences between a right-wing thinker and a left-wing thinker? Right. And or are they all the same and just fighting for their people? And it got me thinking. I was looking at the Republican Party platform for the three Missouri Republican primary Senate candidates, and on the front page of the paper. And of course, it said that all three had the exact same platform, and they just, you know, spoke about it either more forcefully or less forcefully. That was the only difference you get out of those three. And the three parts of the platform were to lower taxes, less regulation on business, and to deal with the debt. Real shockers there, right?
Yeah.
I started thinking about this in the way I think my Democrat liberal mind works is in this three-step process that I think about. Where you know, step one is you try to analyze whatever the problem is. Step two is you try to enact some sort of solution, and then step three is you kind of look to see what the result of your solution was. Did the solution work? Did it not work? Whatever it is, and I think in the ideal sense, a liberal brain tries to go through those three steps to varying degrees of efficacy, we can say. So like, for example, like the healthcare thing came up in my mind. So I'm thinking of the healthcare debate. So we have a healthcare problem in this country. We got high mortality rates, high infant mortality rates. We have high costs. We have a high number of uninsured people, and our entitlement spending for our retirees and disabled people is going through the roof. Okay, so we got this problem. Ooh, we got this problem here. That's step one. And so step two is to try to enact some sort of solution, which we'll call Obamacare as some kind of attempt at a solution to those problems. Again, I'm not. We'll put that in a box as far as how good that solution is. But that's the plan. You have the solution, and I think it's fair. 10 years from now, when everything goes through, we can look and say, hey, did the costs go down? Did they go up? Do we have less uninsured? How is our mortality rate doing? How is the country's health as a whole? Seems like a reasonable plan, and I think that's the way a liberal mind works. It tries to go through those three steps. And I think the way liberals and conservatives in general sometimes miss each other is that I don't believe the conservatives are going through those steps. They're not going through the steps of analyzing a problem, finding a solution, and checking the result. All they really care about is step two, what the solution is. So it doesn't really matter what the problem set is. It doesn't really matter what the result is. The point is to do whatever you think the solution is, like these three parts of the platform, like lower taxes. So now the Republican platform, especially with these candidates and as a major plank in the Republican platform idea, is to lower taxes. That idea of lowering taxes has nothing to do with our current economic situation or our current time. It doesn't have to do with whether in wartime or not in wartime, or whether the economy is completely booming and we have a surplus in the government, or we have a huge amount of debt like we have now. Doesn't matter what the problem is, the solution is always the same. You lower taxes.
When is the solution to raise taxes? Sorry, I don't know if you're at a point where we can discuss something or if you want to keep going, but
I think you get the
idea. It is overly simplistic to say that. And they don't just you're making it sound like they're the middle school kid running for class president. Well, everybody gets ice cream. That's your equivalent of lowering taxes.
Yes.
Or lowering taxes is the equivalent of that. And well, I think, buy that. There's a problem with the economy. How would you go about it?
Well, I think when you're really talking about taxes, I feel like the left is trying to figure out what is the right tax rate. What's the right tax rate for capital gains? What's the right tax rate for millionaires? What's the right tax rate for people who make $10,000? Maybe they should pay a little more. What's the right tax rate for middle class? What should we do with this tax rate to figure out what makes it right? That's, to me, is a liberal approach to that problem. What's the right-wing approach to that problem in my mind? Lower them all. They're all too high. Lower all of them. Problem solved. And not only will I say that's the solution to lower them all, that no matter what happens after that, say everybody's tax rate gets cut in 10%. Cut by 10%. So Mitt Romney's now paying 5%. We're paying 20%, whatever it is. And revenues go down in the government. Public workers are fired. Whatever happens, maybe revenues go up. Whatever happens, doesn't even matter what the result is. No, if the result is good or bad, it doesn't matter because the point was to lower the taxes. Do you see what I'm saying there?
I see what you're saying, but what data do you have to back that up? That I know you know for a fact that conservatives aren't considering one and three. They're only lowering taxes.
What Republicans have you heard of recently that have said, hey, we could probably use stand to raise some taxes on group A or X or Y? I have not heard a single conservative even mention the idea that anybody's taxes could possibly go up in any case, whether it's capital gains or tax on dog food or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, I got a couple of points to make here.
Bring it.
First, I'll respond to your question and say you're right. None of them are going to go on the record and say, hey, let's consider raising taxes on this group over here.
Right.
So I agree with you. That's not going to happen. The Republican Party won't allow it. You know, they all close ranks and, you know, they beat the drum, lower taxes.
All right. I'm going to give you a subtopic. Would you agree that it would be the same platform if we were in the reverse of these economic times?
Yeah,
Yep. Okay, right.
So, I think that is a fundamental plank in their platform. I will give you that.
And, okay.
And I think it has been for, you know, most of the Republican Party's history, but I don't think it was ever quite so critical until George Bush 41 basically lost, you know, the whole read my lips thing.
Right.
I think that galvanized the party and said, hey, you know what? This really is an issue that you know, could be political suicide if you
right.
If you don't play it right.
Right.
But the point I wanted to make about what you were saying is, you know, that conservatives don't care what the results are. And, I would say that the liberals don't either. And the result is, does this make me feel better?
Right.
Does this assuage my liberal guilt? If so, then it was a good solution.
Right.
It doesn't matter whether it solved the problem or not.
Can I sufficiently pat myself on the back?
Right.
Wait a minute, right. Rob. Now you're saying right, like you agree with that.
No, okay. So what I coyly didn't mention some things in my original rant there.
Yeah.
And exactly. this is what makes me more of a centrist and a cynic than the radical liberal that would be possibly more entertaining on the show. I do believe in this three-step process. And I do believe liberals and Democrats try to enact the three-step process. I'll say they botch all three steps. I'll say when a problem comes along, they probably see the wrong problem. They don't really see what's going on. The solution they enact is never going to work, or it's just a terrible solution, or maybe it'll work. It's their best guess. Maybe it's good, but who knows what's going to happen. And then the result comes out something completely different than what they were aiming for. So I think they try the three steps. They just suck at it.
How can you believe that?
You don't believe it?
How can you... I don't understand how you can say, oh, these sweet liberals, they're trying to do the right thing. They just aren't good at it. Those guys over there only want to do one thing and one thing only.
No, I'm not saying they're sweet and the other guys are liberal. What I'm trying to highlight is that when you feel like the left and the right are miscommunicating, I think this is why. I think when the left starts talking about taxes, they're starting to talk about, well, what's the tax rate over here, or what's the tax rate on rich people or poor people or Wall Street bankers or banks or corporations or military contractors. That's what liberals are talking about when they talk about taxes. And what
liberals are talking about is always less than $200,000, your taxes are too high.
Well, right. Throw out what their solution is. What I'm trying to say is that the two sides are not even talking about the same thing. That when a Democrat says raise taxes on people making more than $250,000, and they're trying to think, well, what would that do to revenues? What would that do to incentives? What would that do? The Republicans have stopped even listening to the conversation because it's raising taxes. You see how they're not.
And by the same token, when the Republicans say, no, everybody needs to pay their fair share, the Democrats stop listening and say, no, you can't make these lower income people pay any taxes, and you can't cut what they get back.
So you're happy with the fair share idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm happier than...
I haven't heard that really come out, really. I've heard it bandied about, but I don't think Mitt Romney's going on to raise the taxes on the poor platform.
Of course he's not. He's trying to get elected. But right. I'm talking about what you're saying here.
I guess what I'm saying is that I'm highlighting a difference in approach. I'm not trying to assign moral superiority on one side or the other, nor am I even saying that one side's solution is better than the other. I'm trying to point out a different that the whole approach to the problem is different on the two sides.
But by doing that, you are assigning moral superiority to the liberal side.
That's because they're saying
exactly. Here, exactly what you're presenting. Bogus.
I will go so far as to say that the tools that that conservatives are willing to use, that the number of tools available to them is more limited than liberals.
How so?
Well, just because the GOP will run roughshod over anybody that steps out of line, right?
Okay, yes, that's true.
So anybody that's thinking a little bit outside of the Republican box is going to be shunned.
Right.
And ridiculed. And so I don't see that as much on the left end of the spectrum.
True, I agree.
They're allowed to be a little more creative with their solutions. Now, most of their solutions center around raising taxes or finding
sure.
different ways to distribute the taxes we already have.
Sure.
But, you know, there's nobody, I don't know, there's no hall monitor there who's, going
right.
to put the smack down on somebody who suggests something a little unorthodox.
Right, right. I agree.
So I'll go that far with you.
Right, right. So I think when someone's trying to suggest this approach or that approach or this unorthodox approach or let's come to the middle in this way or whatever it is, I don't think they're – I'm not saying that solution is any better or it has a chance of working. I mean, we could judge the policies on their merit if we want. I'm not really talking about the policies. I'm talking about the approach.
Yeah.
That if a Democrat approaches a Republican in our ideal world here, and they come up with a compromise, like there is no compromise because there's no getting off the don't raise taxes.
Right.
So. I'm just highlighting the fact that something like taxes or regulation on business or whatever it is, that like the point, if we want to talk about regulating business, suppose Republicans get their way and there's less regulation on Wall Street and there's less regulation on small business, although I have no idea what that regulation is, or on oil companies or whatever it is. And say the economy booms. Well, great. Say we have more oil spills and we have more complete bubbles and busts and banks going under. Well, that's fine too. It's because the right thing to do in a Republican mind is to not have regulation. So the point of the solution for what I see on my side is to cause some sort of result that we hope is good. On the other side, it seems like the point of the solution is the solution itself. It's to enact that policy. The results be damned. It doesn't really matter what the results are, because the point of lowering taxes isn't to boom the economy. It's not to create jobs. That's not why we lower taxes. If you're a Republican, you lower taxes because you're supposed to lower taxes because taxes are too high.
Some would say that that's a principled approach. And, you know, the principle being that taxes are evil, therefore anytime you can lower them, it's a good thing,
right.
Regardless of what the outcome is.
Yeah, and I've heard an interview with Grover Norquist.
Right.
And like the guy bamboozled me, man. I was listening, and I started believing all. I was like, this guy knows what he's talking about. Because as he explained to explain to the listeners, you probably already know, Grover Norquist is the head of the Americans for Tax Reform or something. Some group of some kind, but his claim to fame is he demands that all congressmen and all elective officials sign a pledge to basically not raise taxes no matter what. And he keeps a little list of who signed the pledge, who's broken the pledge. It's a real tough thing for an incoming congressman. And it seems overly rigid, but as he explains it, you know, he thinks that all of the problems we have all stem from this one evil at the top. That you can pick away at the problems in some kind of Swiss cheese fashion, but the only way to really solve the problems is to starve the government of its money. So that's rule number one. You know, so do you agree with my characterization of the Norquist approach?
Yes.
Right. Right.
Like I said, it's a principled approach.
Right, right. And yeah, I kind of respected him for it when I kind of heard him explain it. But it does, and it makes sense to me. I understand what's going on there. But it does highlight to this approach. Like, he's not looking at what are the problems of the country. And he's also not really looking at what would happen if we lowered taxes. He's not even there yet. He sees the problems the problem set is so large, it's not even worth analyzing for step one. And the results are going to take so long to come, it's not even worth checking on what the results are on step three. The whole point is step two, lower the taxes.
Wow. Like I said, if your fundamental principle is that taxation is slavery or taxation is theft,
yeah,
then you know that's the end of the conversation, right?
Right. I agree with that. So what I'm proposing to you is that when you just said it's the end of the conversation, and I think that's my theorem. Posing that's why there is no conversation, or that's why the conversation seems so strained,
or strange, or
like, why is this not getting anywhere? It's because we're not talking quite about the same thing.
Yeah, but yeah, right. Like Ayn Rand said, there can be no compromise between food and poison.
Right.
Okay. So yep. There's no middle ground on that subject because the people who view taxes as evil are not going to compromise and say, well, we'll allow just a little bit of evil.
Right, right. And I respect that stance. That's a good stance to have. I mean, it raises questions. If you're a Democratic president and you're a Democratic Congress, I mean, can you really be faulted for not being able to find compromise with the Republicans? You know, is that really your fault?
Wow. Oh, Rob.
No, I'm saying it's a principled approach, but there, do you see how there's no wiggle room? There's like Jerry just said, there's no compromise between food and poison. So how can they get anywhere? You know, because we're talking about I think the Democrats are like, how about a little bit of steak and I'll hook you up with just like a tiny bit of arsenic.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and it's a non-starter for the Republicans, so nothing happens.
Wow.
I would say it's the Democrats' fault for probably proposing solutions that are not good.
So,
but I wouldn't fault them for not being able to find compromise with a party whose main goal is to not compromise on major issues.
So okay, then to me that raises a question: is politics just so broken now that you know we can't fix it, right? Because to go back to the way things were when everybody was compromising and actually accomplishing things, that doesn't seem like it's achievable.
Right. What happened? I mean, Reagan raised taxes, didn't he? I believe he did. I think Bush raised taxes. Both Bushes did.
Well,
I mean, depending on what the situation is or what's going on in the country, I could see it.
Cut taxes. First he raised them, then he cut them.
Well, something like that.
Let's. Define our terms.
Yeah.
But, you know, because cutting taxes could be just cutting the increase, you know, the
lowering the increase.
Right. The rate of increase of taxes.
Yeah.
And raising taxes could be the opposite of that. So,
yeah.
Right. But I guess what I'm saying is Republican presidents in charge of the entire one-third of the branches of government have not been, I feel like in the past they've tried to survey the land. They've tried to go through this three-step process. What's going on in the economy? What's happening? What's going on in the Congress? What's happening in a way that we can make this better?
Yeah.
In a way that I think that's gone now.
Yeah. And I'm not even getting the feeling from Romney that if he were to be elected, that he would even entertain the notion of compromising on those things.
Really?
You know?
Huh.
I just think that, you know, he is so hyper partisan at this point. I don't know.
I feel the other way. I feel like he would sell out that whole side once he got in.
Really?
Yeah. What do you think, Jeremy?
I don't know.
Jeremy has no comment.
We've beat him down with nonsense.
Well, okay. So, what are you thinking about there, Jeremy? What?
Speak up, little camper.
What I'm thinking is the way Rob's talking about there can be no compromise. Well, I kind of agree with that, but the reason for no compromise is because of opinions like the ones Rob is presenting here, where he's saying he's done two things. He's he said the liberal mindset has this plan, this three-step plan. And also, when you have a Democratic president and a Democratic-controlled Congress, well, you can't fault them because these other guys won't compromise with them. Everything is coming from these guys are good and these guys are bad.
No, no. Like, for example,
that's how it's presented, though, Rob.
No, well, I don't think it's good and bad. I think there's bad on both sides. Like I said, you can't fault them in the first 2 years of the Obama presidency when he had both houses and a president. All right, well, do your worst. You know, that was the kind of the turn it over. This is your prime time. You've wanted this for decades. You got it for 2 years. Let's see what you do. And what did they do? Botched it, you know. They botched it with the stimulus thing, and then they cranked out like the hodgepodge healthcare law. Is that really what they, is that really what they should have been doing at that point? No, it's not what they should have been doing at that point. But that was their time to do it because they only had 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not. I think, like I say, I more fault the Democrats and a liberal way for just being wrong. I think they're just wrong. Don't you think they're wrong?
Yeah.
Yes. So I think they just misunderstand things. But I appreciate the effort, I guess. You know, Obama in there risking his presidency to try to figure out what to do about uninsured Americans and healthcare costs. I that's a huge hat tip for me. Now, what came out? What is it going to work? I don't know. Is it, you know, do I wish it was different? Yes. Do I ask questions of myself and then answer them? Yes. So it's like I see them trying and I like what they're trying, and then it's just endless disappointment, I think, for me.
I don't like what they're trying.
Right.
Because I don't feel like they're trying with it. It would be like I invite them over to my house to help me fix it up, and they're just beating on the walls with hammers randomly. Well, they're trying. You know, I was hoping that we'd be able to fix this place up, and now all my drywall is destroyed. But hey, they're trying. Boy, they're really trying.
They did.
That
swing
is
a
not
hammer.
Acceptable.
It's not that bad.
Oh, the hell it isn't.
I agree with Jeremy, but you know. The folks on his side of the aisle are just as guilty of that.
Yes, that is very true. So, I don't want any politician trying to help me fix up my house. I want them to stay away and let me fix it up on my own.
Yes.
Get out of the way.
Well, when all you have is a hammer, every looks like a...
Every problem looks like a... Yes. Well... No.
Or if you're a Democrat, it just looks like a spot in the drywall you can bash. You know, it doesn't even have to be a nail. Just swing around.
Oh,
it's tiring. All right,
what you got, Rob?
All right.
You wanted to talk about Bain Capital.
Yeah, I got a big thing about Bain Capital.
Somewhat topical since there was just a little... story, mini scandal, I guess, that broke today. Did you hear about that?
Right, yes. Describe it for our listeners and me who wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, well, I guess Mother Jones did a little digging and discovered the papers that Bain Capital filed with the SEC for a couple of years in the early 2000s still listed Mitt Romney as CEO, chairman of the board, and owner of the company, even though he has claimed during his campaign that he left in 1999 to go run the Salt Lake City Olympic Committee.
Right, right. Because during that time, didn't Bain Capital tank a bunch of companies and fire a bunch of people?
Right. And he's been claiming that, you know, all of that happened years after he left. And so he, you know, that wasn't on his watch. So today they, you know, found these SEC filings that show that it was technically he was still listed. And so they're, you know, I guess one of Obama's campaign directors was on a conference call today, and she made the claim that, you know, Romney was either lying to the SEC, which is a felony, or he's incompetent.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I a lot of my thoughts, as you could tell, I'm about 80% believe or 60% can be dissuaded or have my mind changed by a good argument. This I completely believe 100% in that this whole Bain Capital thing is just so much missing the point. That the point, the Democrats are missing the point, the Republicans are missing the point. And the idea is that Bain Capital's job was to make money for Bain Capital. That's all its job was. Its job wasn't to create jobs, as Romney asserts, that he has experience in creating jobs. No, he doesn't have experience in creating jobs. He has experience in using the world of finance and the world of money and leveraged debt or whatever it is he did, or venture capital, using those tools to make more money for himself via these companies. If that meant saving jobs and growing the company, he did that. If it meant loading them with debt and gutting them and firing the people, it was that. That's all the point of Bain Capital was.
Right.
So Romney is way over. So and now he's backed himself into a little corner, right? Because he claims that his time at Bain Capital means that he can create jobs for the country. Well, now you're going to run into all these sorts of problems. Where what about all the times when Bain Capital didn't create jobs? And it must be confusing for him internally, if he even has a soul at all, to analyze it, you know, because he knows what the point of Bain Capital was. You know, when he was at Bain Capital and living large and making millions, he wasn't thinking, gee, how many jobs did I create today?
Right.
Why would he? I don't fault him for that. That's what he did. That's what he thought of was, how much money did we make today? That's all that matters to Bain Capital. And it's a strange oddity that he's kind of now twisted it into some kind of job creation program, leaving him open to attack about, well, what happened when you didn't create jobs, which is kind of a silly attack too by the Democrats, because that's like I say, it's not the point of Bain Capital. That wasn't Mitt Romney's job, was to make companies thrive. There was a point, was to make more money for himself. Hat tip to him. I don't fault him at all for that. I think I was glad he did it. Good job for him. But now when you see it for what that is, it's strange that he's holding that up as like almost like a model of national leadership on the economy.
Yeah.
You know, is that really what we want? Like he didn't go into companies who were making 500 widgets a day,
right,
and in a year his goal was to get them to make 800 widgets a day. You know, and cut costs. Like that wasn't what his role was.
Right.
His role was to play financial tricks and use gobs of money behind him to turn these situations that were vulnerable into situations that could make him money. And it's like, so is that really what we're looking for in an economic leader? That seems, it's very strange, but like I say, both sides are missing the point.
He's taking a page out of the Ross Perot playbook, right? Basically saying, hey, you know, let's lift the hood, let's get in there and you know, fix this, and basically relying on his reputation as a businessman.
Right.
And that was Perot's whole shtick was, hey, look at me, I'm a self-made billionaire. I know what I'm
right.
doing.
Right.
Follow me. Here we go. Let's do this. And I think that's what Romney's trying to channel here with.
Right, but he's shining a big shining Klieg light on something that's pretty sketchy or pretty unseemly.
Right. Yeah. And he doesn't want anybody to look too closely at it.
Right, right. And it resonates with this idea of what the housing bubble was all about and what the Wall Street crash was all about. You know, we had all these things because of goofy games played by banks to you know, kind of manipulate things in a way that would kind of almost like create money from nothing. You know, they didn't help companies be more successful. They didn't help companies be more efficient or workers more productive or hire people. Their job was, they had X amount of dollars, this many billion, and their job was to turn that billion into 2 billion. Didn't matter how they did it. And that's what this whole Bain Capital thing was all about. And I think when you push the gas pedal that far on that kind of thing, that's when you create bubbles. When you create bubbles, they all burst, and now we're in the burst. And so it's strange that he's really hanging his hat on that. It's a strange thing to really highlight. I'm crisp and clear on this topic.
Well, I think, you know, the narrative on the other side is one of class warfare, which I don't have much respect for.
How so? Describe.
Well, it's just, you know, they keep hammering on Romney because he's rich.
Right.
He's out of touch. He's, you know, he's the 1%. He's, you know, he's all of these things that their political base has been programmed to be opposed to. I use the term hate, but, you know.
Right. I don't really know what that gets them, you know. I don't really know what, you know, that. Yeah, I mean, he is out of touch. I mean, they should definitely make fun of him for the jet ski, just like John Kerry and his surfboard or whatever he had when he went windsurfing. Remember that? Awesome. You know, they should definitely hit him on that. But as far as just being rich, I mean, it's a little. I mean, I think you could hit him on his backstory and how he was, that his path to riches was a lot easier laid out than it was for old Barack's. But as far
here we go again.
What? But as far as the fact that he's, yeah, I don't really know. I'm with you, Jerry. I don't really know what the whole class warfare.
That
thing.
Is why we're even discussing this is because the Obama campaign has included this in their narrative. You know,
right?
And there's nobody. You know, Obama's not rolling change to buy gas either.
Right.
He's doing just fine, and by anybody's measurement, he's rich.
Right.
So it's just this, you know, well, he's more rich than I am, kind of.
That's why I think the whole out-of-touch argument is one of the goofiest in politics, and I can't stand when they even bring it up,
yeah.
Because they're almost all out of touch.
Absolutely. I mean, when you climb the ladder to that level, there's no way you can – you know, stay in touch with your roots.
Right. Can you say that it's been less long ago that Obama was in touch?
No.
Come on. No?
No, I can't say that.
Why not?
Because it's again, it's measuring, well, I'm slightly less out of touch than you are. I'm slightly less rich than you are.
Right.
That, therefore, I'm more qualified to be president and represent the American people. Well, no, you're not.
Well, I wouldn't say it qualifies you, but I'll
well, then
I'll
why have... is it even being discussed? If it doesn't, if it's not a discriminator, then it shouldn't be discussed.
It's an attribute.
It's a red herring. It's a red herring.
You have to drink the beer in the pub.
A common man.
It is true. Like, I mean, I do, you know, Obama fans always, we get a little tingle down our legs when we see the president hoop it at the army base or I think he has an easy manner with the common man. I'll give him credit for all that.
Yeah.
There's two parts of, yeah. One thing is you got to look at who we have, who have Democrats had to, you know, get behind in the recent past. I mean, Clinton was always good at that, but you know, we had to fight Al Gore. Like, would you want Al Gore showing up at your pub? Get out of here, Al. Or John Kerry, you know. So, but you're right. At the same time, it's obviously an illusion, you know. Like, this guy's just like me. You know, he, like, maybe 15 years ago, he may have been more like me than Mitt Romney was 15 years ago. But the guy isn't quite like me. Yeah, you're like, he's not rolling change to get gas.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll discuss some of our listener feedback and maybe a couple other things. So stay with us.
I'm gonna get you.
We are back. We got some feedback from a brand new listener. And this listener says, in regards to our last episode where we were discussing healthcare, Rob is wrong.
Yes. Love it.
I was so disappointed in him. But he makes good points that I tend to not agree with at all. I don't agree with government being so involved with individuals' lives. I think communities and families should care for their family or extended family. Less fraud. Not the government who wants to make us dependent on them and afraid to live without them and for us to look to them for all our answers. So, somebody there clearly not a fan of the nanny state.
I'm glad I disappoint. Like, sometimes I feel like I'm kind of a perpetual disappointment machine. But I'm glad that it extends over the radio waves as well.
Yeah. Right. We also got a couple of comments on our Facebook page. I had posted a graphic, and somebody disagreed with it. Said, "Not if you agree with Obama's policies."
I missed that. What was the graphic?
I don't know. It came from facebook.com/beingconservative, but all it says is, apparently I'm supposed to be more outraged by what Mitt Romney does with his money than by what Obama does with mine.
Giggle, giggle.
Yeah.
Like.
And so anyway, one of our fans said, not if you agree with Obama's policies. And so I responded, that's fair. Are you an Obama supporter? And he says, was. Now it's a better than the alternative situation. But you know, certainly appreciate, because right, I mean that's been the case in I think every election in my lifetime. You know, since I was old enough to vote, it was the lesser of two evils was the way you had to go.
Yeah, I think it'd be very difficult to get a candidate who he just hits every point in your heart or mind.
And
so
what must that have been like when we still had candidates that you could get excited about voting for? You
know? Hey, I'm excited. Well, less excited.
Poor man.
I just wonder though, is that like, cause there are people who are excited about their candidate, right?
Right.
And I would love to sit down and talk to these people and find out why. And maybe it's just because they're not paying that close attention.
Well, you'd have to go during visiting hours at the loony bin.
Ignorance is bliss. So like, oh, I love him, you know. Like, okay, but I don't know. Our listener Nathan gave us a few links to stories that he found interesting, so we'll pass those along to our listeners. One of them in particular I wanted to mention is about the LIBOR scandal. And LIBOR, for those who don't know it, is the London Interbank, I'm trying to remember what the O is now. Anyway, it's the
essentially rates between bank transfers, right?
The rates that all the banks in London charge one another for short-term loans. And you know, this is somewhat fascinating because if you'd never heard of LIBOR rates, and you know, apparently the only people who have ever heard of them are those who read the fine print in their adjustable rate mortgages, because it says in there that that's what the rate is based on, is this LIBOR rate.
The 1 year, usually.
Yeah. And so anyway, the scandal is that the CEO of Barclays Bank in London admitted to his bank manipulating that rate, and that by itself would be, I guess, scandalous. But his comments, he went on to say, "Hey, look, we all do it," meaning all of the banks do it. They're all manipulating that rate. So, you know, it's got a lot of people wondering. This is like one of the fundamental underpinnings of the entire world economy, and if it's being manipulated, what does that mean for everything else? And you know, you can draw your own cynical conclusions, I guess, but
well, I don't see why, one, that's a surprise, and two, it happens with markets, large financial firms manipulating markets.
Yeah.
So where's, it's wrong, I agree with that, and something should be done when people are breaking the law.
Well, that's just the thing, though. Is it against the law? Because, I mean, the way I understand this is just, you know, a gentleman's agreement that has been in place for centuries, and the Bankers Association, which is a private organization, just does a daily poll of all the banks and asks them what rate would you expect to borrow money at. You know, all the banks report that rate once a day, and they average them. They have, you know, an algorithm they go through. They throw out the top four and the top four, and they average the rest.
This sounds like Olympic figure skating scores.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, they do that in an attempt to make it harder to manipulate the average rate. But if you know, if the banks are truly manipulating that rate, it means that there's like at least 10 banks that are all in collusion together doing this. But I don't know that that's against the law necessarily. Maybe it is. I haven't really read too much of the detail.
Well, I think if you characterize it as collusion, I think it probably would be.
Maybe. I mean,
yeah. Hard to say. You're right. I don't know whether it is or not, but it certainly sounds like it is.
So, are there any links in the reading room you guys want to highlight?
I put one in there, but I found it through Drudge, so I won't say anything about it.
Come on.
No, it's probably phony anyway. Probably fake, made-up story.
Probably is, but you could fire it out there.
I'll mention a couple that I put out there. One is a chapter, I guess, from an online book, and the link is An American Nightmare, and it's just about what, you know, how many Americans are in prison right now, and how enormous the criminal justice system is in this country. And you know, one of the quotes from this book is that the U.S. criminal justice system now employs more people than America's two largest private employers, Walmart and McDonald's, combined.
Nice.
Yeah. So
that's sad on about three different points, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, yes.
It's a good business opportunity, though. We've got to find a way to make some company, some small company, and sell them some sort of service.
Mm-hmm.
That keeps me far away from prisoners. You know, healthcare in jails, man, that's the way to be. We don't need to make widgets. We just need to make more bars.
I included a link, too, to the CNN story about the heat wave last week and the fact that the past 12 months are the warmest ever recorded in the United States. So there you go, Jeremy. Global warming is real.
Just a coincidence.
Yeah, that seals it for me. It must be real.
And United States has experienced the warmest 12 months since record keeping began in 1895. There you go. Done. You know, I put the link out there mainly because, you know, we've talked about this in the past when we cover global warming and climate change. That is the statistic I would expect to hear on the news. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
And this is like the first time I've heard it. That's why I thought it was noted.
Yeah. Well, all right, I'll read it.
Well, I wasn't trying to shame you into it, but so
I have an editorial comment, sort of, I guess. This is along the lines of a can't we all just get along? But I received an email. There's an associate I have who's, let's say he's guarding the line and right, and he sends around these emails that are many times clearly bogus, and I just sometimes I halfway read them, other times I delete them, and I don't really do any research on them because most of the time they're just, I can tell they're bogus. But one kind of struck me a little bit. He claimed that it was saying the National Day of Prayer for 2012 was canceled by Barack Obama, but then there was some Muslim day of prayer that he honored. I just had to look it up. And here I'm reading the presidential proclamation for the National Day of Prayer 2012 on the WhiteHouse.gov website. It was obviously not canceled. It's right here. Can people quit sending around this goofy stuff that is baseless and inflammatory and... Yeah. This has no place. It has no place.
Preach it. Preach it, Brother Jeremy.
I thought now that we have sites like Snopes and, you know...
Well, see, Jerry, it came out that the guy who runs Snopes is tied to Barack Obama, so you can't trust Snopes anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I'm serious. I read an email about that.
Oh, jeez.
He was not reporting certain things on Snopes because they shined a negative light on Obama. So.
Okay. Well, anyway.
you have to allow me to giggle at the phenomenon of Conservapedia. I don't know if you've heard of such a site.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
No.
I have not.
Oh, it's a Wikipedia for conservatives, and it's not a joke.
I see.
But it's because Wikipedia is way too liberal, and so it goes through the founding of the nation, but does it in a conservative way. Yeah, throw Conservapedia in the show notes. Could take a quick spin. I mean, it's obviously laugh riot, you know. But you know, reality does have a well-known liberal bias.
Wrong.
Wrong.
All right. Anybody else got any more links here they want to discuss?
Got nothing.
All right. Jeremy?
No, because it's just comical. It's not even worth talking about.
Let's hear it.
It's the one where Romney, they said, they being, you know, the other people, the other side, the whole Romney getting booed at the NAACP rally was orchestrated by him. And then there's another article about an event where Eric Holder was speaking. It was an NAACP event. It was in a state where they are suing the law that they want to enact to require voter ID. It's voter ID law. Well, at this speaking engagement with Eric Holder, they were requiring journalists to present two forms of ID. I just found that comical.
Nice. I like it.
Okay, so you will find that link in the reading room. It's The Art of Hypocrisy.
Yes.
All right. That about for this week. Want to thank our listeners, thank our newest Facebook friends. We had a couple of new people friend us on Facebook, so thanks to those folks. And we're looking forward to feedback from all of you, so please get in touch with us. And we will see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.
Hello. I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
Well, I am the government, and I'm really busy now. You have no idea how hard it is to be president.
I always like to say, politics is not a bad profession. If you succeed, there are many rewards. If you disgrace yourself, you can always write a book. So, what you doing here?
This, I'm redistributing the wealth. I learned in school spreading the wealth is good for everyone.
Well, I learned from real life that it's not. What about the guy you're taking money from?
Okay, so it's good for 75% of the people. Isn't taking money from one person to make three others happy a good thing?
No, it's a very bad thing. In fact, there's a word for it. It's called theft.
But it will better the lives of three-fourths of the people.
Actually, it will make life worse for 100% of the people. And we call that socialism.
I can't stand how all you conservatives say socialism, like it's a dirty word.
That's funny. I feel the same way about how you liberals use the word capitalism. How about giving me 5 minutes and let me tell you a story, Jellybean?
No, thanks.